Okay, awesome. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm glad everyone has made it to 3 o'clock on FOSDEM. My name is Waseem Musa. I'm the CTO of Open Cities Lab, a nonprofit organization working out of South Africa, predominantly in the public sector, and it's a civic tech organization generally working with cities around Africa and specifically in South Africa. So today I'll talk a little bit about open source approaches to a secure data exchange in South Africa's DPI. South Africa is going through a large digital transformation, as are many other African countries and South American countries as well. So I'm hoping to share our last 16 months of learning to build DPI and the journey so far. So firstly, Open Cities Lab's vision, a city where every resident, regardless of income, identity, or location, can access essential services they need with dignity and ease. And it's very important that the beginning part is a city, because generally this is where citizens interact with local government. And I think just two sessions ago, Nicholas was mentioning local government initiatives for open source, and DPI often cases is working at a very high level, generally at a national level. So to see service delivery impact through DPI is hard to track, but it's important. So what is DPI? It's a set of foundational digital systems that forms the backbone of modern societies. DPI enables secure and seamless interactions between people, businesses, and governments. This is from UNDP. How I like to think of it is very much like roads. So just how roads are physical infrastructure built to provide access to other infrastructure. So we use roads to go to hospitals, police stations, private sector, businesses, and so on. But in itself, it's also an infrastructure that needs to be built, secured, and transport various people throughout. On the next two slides, I've got a bit of personas about the current state of affairs in South Africa and how people access digital services. So we got the example here of Tandi, where, you know, maybe in EU it's a little bit different, but speaking to some people, I know there are some similarities. So incomplete information about where to access services. Oftentimes in South Africa, we have to visit physical locations to apply for certain things. Tandi must submit physical copies for verification. So, you know, just interacting with government needs physical copies of certain things. Oftentimes, they don't meet our needs in terms of services. And there's large amounts of delays, long queues, and limited payment options. So that's the current state of affairs. This was pre-digital transformation. It's been just over a year, and there's a lot of national initiatives kind of building alongside to help speed this along. South Africa in general is highly digitized from the IT perspective. So there are a lot of great systems built for government. However, as you'll see a little bit later in the talk, most of it is isolated in silos within the departments. And, you know, speaking and listening to Open Forum Summit yesterday and many of the other EU cases, it seems like it's not just the African problem. It's across the world. So there's three core components to DPI. You have digital identity, digital payments, and the backbone of all of it is the data exchange. These then power all your digital services. So a very simple example one could think about is renewing their passport. To renew your passport, you have to provide an ID, right? That check has to go against some interdepartmental verification. You know, in South Africa, we have Home Affairs, Department of Home Affairs that does the check, and that generally goes through the data exchange. Then some sort of payment is needed to then, you know, renew your passport, and you get the renewal process done. A key part here is not only digital IDs, but we were looking at verifiable credentials holistically. So we were thinking about how you would have a health card, a digital driving license, and not just digital ID. So that's just one example in this particular case. The focus of my talk is going to be on the exchange layer. It's something not seen to us generally as citizens. It's usually interdepartmental accessing of data and extremely important. In fact, I think the most critical layer for DPI. But firstly, what is the data exchange component trying to solve? In South African context, data currently exists in isolated silos, and this rarely hampers streamlined research, evidence-based policymaking, government operations, and ultimately at local government service delivery. So the data exchange is critical. In fact, I would say it's the most critical part of DPI. It connects governments, scales nationally, and enables services for millions. And still at conferences, I think even the last two or three times, I've got a few people just saying, oh, you're building a middleware or an API gateway. But I'm hoping to give a bit more context in this talk. So yeah, over the last 16 months, we did a bit of research in the first 6 months around the data exchanges done around the world and what technology we should use. And we even started piloting in the last 6 or 7 months with government agencies in South Africa. The challenge was set out for us back in 2023. So we were approached by the World Bank to do a feasibility study on what the data exchange for an African country would need, in this particular case, South Africa. This was done alongside the leading department, National Treasury in South Africa. And National Treasury is like, I don't know what's the ministry equivalent here, but they head of finance, they do our budgets, and they set the economic policy of the country. And what we needed to do was make use of integrated data source from various sources for different purposes. So exchange of data in real time, bulk data transfer is still, you know, one of the main ways the government agencies move data, so almost in large flat files that they're moving data. We even wanted to look at open data access and ultimately how all of that leads to evidence-based decision making. What we did in the design journey, so the initial 4 months, we did a needs assessment, meeting the government departments, the major ones that were identified to share data and exchange data. We did a good practice report and research. I'll link to that at the end of the presentation where you'll be able to see it. A high-level architecture of what needs to be done to do a data exchange at scale for a country. And what we did, not only in terms of research, but we actually prototyped with software and government through use cases. It wasn't theoretical. We actually did some real work, and we used open source to do that. Okay, so initially it was called the Integrated Data Lake Project, and we were given the brief around a data lake. It was a good starting point. So what is a data lake? Just an easy technical solution for structured, unstructured, and even semi-structured data. Just a place to move a lot of data into, which generally, to some extent, made a bit of sense for a starting point. However, we'll soon see it's very limited, and it wasn't effective in this particular exchange for an entire country. So the data lake started with three initial architectures. We were looking at centralized, federated, and hybrid or federated. Centralized system, we move all the data into similar to where Treasury is storing the data and do a lot of the research querying of the data in one place. This is technically challenging. There's a lot of data, you know, hundreds of terabytes of data actually being moved in national government. And not only would it be technically challenging, even from a mandate and policy perspective, you know, are they able to actually hold that data and house it? And in South Africa, we have the Personal Protection Act for identity called POPI, and that would kind of break some of the rules around that, especially with like your revenue service sharing data with certain other services. You know, it's quite an extensive legal landscape to navigate from a data exchange. Then we looked at federated. So can we put a data lake solution or a data exchange solution in each department? And this made a lot of sense because kind of that's how our government operates, where departments have various IT solutions and various data maturity. So there, some of our systems, like for revenue, is actually quite advanced. And then there are other departments which are much further behind in terms of IT and infrastructure. So with the mixture of both, on the good end, really good high-quality systems ready for integration, and on the other end, almost nothing available, undercapacitated, we said a hybrid approach is more likely needed in the short term, with a federated approach in the long term. So you would need a central system where those departments or ministries that didn't have capacity can work with and operate in, and then those that can federate off the bat, have the IT systems, can start by federation. So the advantages of the federated and hybrid model: enhanced data control, so departments still maintain ownership of all their data, it's only access to the data, improved scalability, no single source of failure as well. Some of the challenges, and something we're still grappling with to date, is even in federated, it's hard to ensure all departments adhere to a certain standard of exchanging data. So it is a tough challenge, and there are some solutions going around, but it's still there. Also, the technical complexities, you're dealing with different ministries, different departments with various maturities, and each one coming in with different levels of understanding of what data sharing actually means, data exchange. And it's almost like a quid pro quo, like you give me some data, I'll maybe give you some if it's valuable to me. So not only from a mandate perspective, but you have to actually kind of motivate why you'd want access to the data, even from a department sharing data with another department's perspective. We then looked at case studies. So we said, okay, as a technical solution, the data lake makes a lot of sense, but it's not encompassing and not broad enough. So we looked at a number of other countries that already implemented data exchanges, and because we've been working in the open source space for the last decade, we were looking for open source solutions. Very high on the list came Rwanda's Irembo platform, India's Stack, Brazil and UK. Brazil and UK was more around digitizing government information and not about the data exchange itself. They did have an open data platform, which was particularly useful. India's Stack was actually very potent, but not all of it was open, and it was extremely hard to find good documentation on. So something we really struggled with off the bat, and we even engaged with them to a certain extent and just found it didn't fit the solution entirely. Now coming on to the next one, and I think this might not come by surprise, because throughout today I've just heard this particular software mentioned a number of times. We looked at Estonia's X-Road. So just by definition, it's a secure, decentralized data exchange platform, almost fits the spec too perfectly, which enables interoperability across public and private sector. And one of the nice things about X-Road is it's centrally managed, but allows a federated exchange of data. So the registry sits centrally, but departments can share data directly. So once you become a member, as I'll explain in a bit, you can share data directly with each other without the central operator needing to come into effect. And that's particularly powerful, in my opinion, and fits the use case exactly. Now, when motivating for X-Road, we had to look at the underlying open source software. So firstly, the license, what does it provide from a feature perspective? And secondly, what is the ecosystem for X-Road? So an X-Road ecosystem refers to one X-Road instance where members are part of the registry. And this is very important, because just by setting up X-Road, you don't automatically have a data exchange solution. You need members to come on. They need to send, these departments need to sign legal agreements, NDAs, or MOUs. And we had to do a lot of legal work, which I won't touch on in this particular presentation. But there was a large legal undertaking to understand what the mandate of each department was and how they could access data and how that could be enforced through security protocols in the X-Road ecosystem. Now, the X-Road operator controls who is allowed to join the community and defines regulation and practices in the ecosystem. In this particular case, this was Treasury. So why we chose X-Road? The software is actively maintained with a strong community. We spoke to the Nice Foundation. Estonia, Iceland, and Finland are all using it in production for over a decade. Estonia for over two decades. So it really had the data exchange in production for a number of years. Over and above that, we were able to engage Pateri and his team very actively, and he's the CTO of the Nice Foundation. I think it was earlier today where Ben mentioned the model of member organizations from countries coming together to create a sustainable open source community. And Nice Foundation is one of them, where Iceland, Finland, Iceland, and Estonia have all come together to back X-Road as a software being built. It also complies with all the relevant security standards. Its interoperability is a design cornerstone, and it has extensive documentation. I think one of the best I've seen from an open source perspective. This is a quote I found on LinkedIn recently, coming shortly, and I think it's one of the challenges I've seen with open source, and it's from Arturo Muente. He says, too often open source solutions are expected to be implemented by an in-house team, where in practice lacks the mandate or resource to sustain them. So moving from I have a proprietary solution and I am the only one who can implement it to I have an open source solution and you are the only one who can implement it is progress, but it's still not enough. Not all the time departments can maintain this infrastructure themselves, know how to operate it, and there need to be implementation partners who know the local context to come in and assist. So I think this is really nice, and from what I understand in Fostum, just looking around, it's a big thing. Not only how we build open source communities, but how we implement the open source solutions. So the bottom line, X-Road creates a trusted transport network. Organizations maintain their own secure entry points. Very similar to train stations, you know exactly who's coming in and going out. Data traveled in standardized, secure containers. A central authority maintains order without controlling the data. So as you'll see in a bit, all the central server does is have a registry of the members, and that's enforced through public key infrastructure. And everyone can reach everyone else using the same system. So you plug in an API once, it's available to every single other member organization. Or let me rather say it's visible. It's not accessible. It's visible to every other member organization. Technical architecture deep dive and what were our final recommendations. So we said for sure a federated data exchange for a country makes a lot of sense, right? Especially in South Africa's context. It was the way both from mandate and a technical perspective to make sure it's federated. And something really nice about that is you then maintain data sovereignty, so each department still holds all the data. And you are ensuring that its cross-government data exchange is actually just secure. Something about the South African government is most of the IT infrastructure is 90% on-prem. So you have very few systems that are actually in the cloud. This is maybe both a positive and a negative to some extent, because it's hard to scale by procuring servers through in government, especially because you need budget and capacity and so on. So the components mainly included data owner and data consumer layers, which I'll show in the technical architecture, cross-cutting standards and policies for compliance and legislative requirements. We didn't touch on that, but there was a large undertaking from the lawyer's perspective to make sure that even something from a technical perspective we were suggesting was allowed and was going to be put into legislation. And let's dive into it. So on the left-hand side and the right-hand side, we have the data provider internal environment. So in the case of renewing your passport, this could be like Home Affairs. This is already existing environments where, for example, Department of Home Affairs has servers ready to be used. However, they would, in our case, be missing the API layer or the API layer to share data with external entities. And you've got the data consumer environment on the other side. This could be like your state security agencies, so those giving out grants who want to check against your population registry. And that's an example of interdepartmental sharing of data. And this is where X-Road kicks in. So X-Road has a central server, and this has the memberships of all those in the ecosystem. So Home Affairs would be onboarded onto the central server. All your other departments would be a member as well. And the entry points or the encapsulation for security in X-Road is very aptly called security server. It's the entry point and exit point for all data packets going in and out of the system. This is extremely important because this is your train station, your entry, your barrier. So whatever is coming in through here, you know exactly who's coming in, who's got access, and who should be accessing what. So down to very granular and fine-grained policies for your APIs. So for example, on the population registry, if you wanted to allow only certain access by certain government agencies, you can do that through the security server. It does mean that has to be high availability. It doesn't necessarily mean it needs to be very large servers. So in the case of Estonia, we saw they had, I think, only about three or four servers on the population registry feeding almost the entire country, which was crazy. And that's because it's not doing any querying of some sort. It's just the gateway access point to go through and get the data that's happening over here. Data cataloging part is a cool feature of X-Road. So every member in the ecosystem can find out what is happening in the security servers in the network. So if a department's brought on board, they can find out every API that's being made available by government. They can't access it. They still have to go through all your normal membership or MOUs for memorandums of understanding, go through all the legal, go through all the technical onboarding to become and get access to that particular API. But the cataloging part is really cool because it at least allows transparency to show what's out there from an organization. So and in the example of you bringing on Department of Transportation, if they only have one API for driver's license, but they're missing cars, they're missing all your other important key details, you know, that's something very transparent in the network. So the secure part comes in here. So as part of the entire ecosystem, trust services or the public key infrastructure is extremely important. This could either be third party or built by government. And what it means is you need a certification authority and you need a timestamping authority. A certification authority assigns TLS certificates to your security servers, and that's checked against the registry in the central server. And that allows you to become a member. So they will assign a TLS certificate to your security server, and that will be your authentication certificate. You get a second certificate for signing, and that's for all outgoing and incoming requests of data. Timestamping authority is just to make sure something or every exchange of data is packaged and stamped, you know, at a point in time, so it's not on your server time or, you know, as an example, I think Estonia mentioned they were requested from government in a court case to check against a transaction in the population registry, and they had the timestamp of the exact time it went out and which department queried that. And it was for some particular lawsuit. So it's very important that these two audit controls are in place. And like I mentioned, it doesn't necessarily have to be built by government. It would be really cool In our case, one of the other departments is assisting with this. In Europe's case, there might already be some PKI available at the national government level. Okay, so I think that's it. I just wanted to end on one last note for FOSTM. Thanks to all the EU colleagues and the amazing open source community we have out here. I think we're leveraging it. It's a global community, not just an EU approach, and I'm glad to be part of it.